Okay, today's daf is daf Mem Zayin. We're up to Mem Vav on the base right at the bottom. Last line. Zakai b'metziyata. The next thing the Mishnah said, we spoke about what things the father has a schus in. He can give over his daughter for kiddushin. B'kesef, b'shtar, b'biya, we learned yesterday. The next piece is that he also has the rights to anything that she finds or anything that she's zofet or she wins the lottery, whatever the case may be. What is the reason for that? Mishum Eva. It's because since we are interested in him providing for his daughter, as long as she's living in the home, if he's going to feel that she goes around and keeps money that she finds and that she wins and doesn't share it, it's going to create tensions in the relationship. According to Rashi, the reason we want to avoid those tensions is because we want to encourage him to provide for her. Whereas if we create a legal barrier between child and parent, the likelihood is that it's going to end up his feeling, well, okay, she's going to be keeping her own bank accounts for these things, what do I got to provide for her for? Because of that, he won't provide for her. So says Rashi. The Re learns that the element of the Eva over here is that we are worried that because of the fact that he does have rights to her kedushin, we want to make sure that he does not feel resentful of her. Because after all, I mean, he can abuse those rights by giving her over to somebody that's not right for him. I mean, he's allowed to give her over even to a benuvel, mukashri. So we want him to be happy with her. And therefore, we want to discourage any types of breakdown in the relationship. The ma'aseh yadeh, also the father is zeicher to any work that the child does, that she manufactures, that she works for others. Minola. Yomer of unam rab, minayin she ma'aseh habat ma'av. So since the Torah says that a person has the right now to sell bitola ama, so it compares now the ama, therefore, to the seller. I mean, if the relationship of the ama, the ama's ma'aseh and yadai go to the odai, so then that means that the bat ma'aseh yadai goes to avia. Says the Gemara, but emahani mili kitana, the matzi maslin lay. I mean, this makes the dinner ma'aseh yadayim dependent on the schus of mechira. But we know that once she has simani, once she becomes a nara, she would be yotzeit. Mashenkein a nara, obviously once she already has simani, she would be yotzeit with simani, we can't sell her with simani. Which means that he was never given over the right to chiyim kor. So how would we know in that case that a nara also ma'aseh yadayim la avia? Says the Gemara, because Bistabra the Aviyah. These are Gadaitak Masaya, they are Lav the Aviyah. Elohad Zakhile Rachamon, Elohad Vaminsola Kupa, Echimatsimosala. If we've already agreed, the father has the right to give her over to a marriage. Marriage is a heck of a hassle. You know? I mean, he's going to go, they're going to make a chuppah, there's going to be a whole party. What if she says, what are you talking about? I got a job, I got no time for this business, right? He says, well, the Torah gave me rights to marry you off. So she's screaming and shouting. What do you mean? Well, who's going to make up for my lost salary? I got no time for this. So that means if the Torah gave him those rights, it must be that he also has the rights to the money that she's making anyway. She says, look, I get to keep that money, so what's none of your business? So whatever it takes to get you married off, you'll have to suffer the loss. Just be thankful I let you keep any of it. So it must be that otherwise, how could he be mevatek? Mevatek lo mimaaseh yadeh. How could he have the right to make a wedding if she doesn't have to attend the wedding? Because she would be busy working.
What does the Gemara say women want to get married?
What's that?
What does the Gemara say women want to get married?
What's the question?
Well, they want to get married. You're not doing a list.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but we can't certainly give him legally something where she may say, but I don't want, and I certainly don't want a wedding. I got no time for weddings. What kind of raya is that? I mean, maybe the Torah was saying he has a right to marry her off. Obviously, if it causes her monetary loss, he'll have to make it up. So if she says, what, do you want me to attend my wedding? You're going to have to pay me the money that I would be making during this time. This is great stuff. Very, very contemporary issues here. Or, you know, I mean, the muscle of Elilah. Look, why can't he make the wedding in the middle of the night like everybody does nowadays? You get back home from a wedding at 2 o'clock in the morning. So she certainly doesn't have a job at 2 o'clock in the morning, so let her come to the wedding at that time. Maybe she should make the wedding on Shabbos. on Yom Tov. What about, I mean, Tosef says, what about the Isser, the Samachta B'chagecha, the Labishtecha, he says, that's Mamash of the Arayis. This is the Makar of Tosef, that it's a the Arayis, we don't shoot from the Pasek. He says, okay, so maybe, you know, it doesn't mean with a big chuppah, I mean, with a big Suda, so then it's not considered a Simcha, no, it's talking about Chalabai there. But it wouldn't be much, it's all the days. But so we'd be talking about where it wasn't on the level to be Mavato, the Simcha of Yom Tov. The truth is, says the Gemara, Ella, the whole thing is not even a kasha. Kitana lo tzricha kra, for heaven's sakes. If a guy's allowed to sell his daughter to work, then obviously the work is his. What do I need a pasuk for by a kitana? And to be medayik from the pasuk that she has a right to the work. I mean, the very fact that there's a schus to sell means he has a right to the work. The only reason of the pasuk that we're saying in the first place of the relationship of ish to bitola ama is gufa to tell me in the case where he wouldn't have the rights, even though it's appearing in the context of the kitana, but ki itzrich lenaras, even though the kitana is written, but the relationship of le'ama is extra. And that le'ama comes to tell me that, therefore, we find that the same relationship that exists between a daughter and an odoy in the sense of an ama is what exists between a father and a daughter simply by virtue of the child. The next thing the Mishnah says, ba'afarat nidoreha, the father has a right to afarat nidorim, that we already know, minolan, dechti ben ureha beit aviyah. As we had yesterday, that pasuk is specifically referring to his rights to cancel her nidorim. U'mikabelet gita, the father also gets to take the get in the event of a divorce, minolan, dechti v'yatsa v'hayeta, itkush yitziyah la'havayah. So the Torah now compares Yitziyah from Kiddushin to the Kiddushin itself. The father is Zerka to the Kiddushin, then he also has the Yad to be Mekabel the Get. Ve'eino ochel perot b'chayeha. However, the father does not get to eat. If she inherits money from her rich grandfather, her maternal grandfather, and now she's a multi-millionaire, and the father doesn't get any rights to that, not even to the interest. He has to create a trust account, and everything is funded to her future. Do you realize how recently the world as a whole has arrived at these laws? It's incredible. We're talking about a couple of thousand years ahead of the rest of the world. According to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, the father does get the interest or the production if she inherited a field. What's the machlokus over here? We know that the truth is that a husband should not have any rights to the interest payments on his wife's property either. Why did the Rabbanan make such a takana? Because they expect every husband to act as an insurance company. So that if she actually is kidnapped and he needs to pay a ransom, so the fact that he is getting continued payments from her property, that now is meant to cover her ransom on some level. It's either it's because he figures, well, you know, I'll have the money in the future, but there's money coming in. But an av, Michael Amema, what are you going to say, that if we don't allow the father to eat the perot of her bank accounts, he's not going to redeem her and pay a ransom? Fathers are soft touches anyway, so you don't have to give him any money. He's a soft touch. So Michael Amema, the mimna v'loparik, v'lavachi parik, if you don't give him any money, he's going to end up ransoming off his daughter. He's not going to sit back and let his daughter be carried away. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, not so when it comes to money. Avnami mimne velo porek. Look, let me tell you something. If it wouldn't be that she had her own trust fund, of course a father wouldn't sit back. But Lamaisa, think of it the other way. Your daughter has her own money. Okay, for the past 5 years, you haven't seen a penny of it. The money is just accruing over there. She's got a field, and she's handling the business. She's not giving you a penny. So now she ends up getting captured. They send you a ransom note. So the built-up reaction is, you know what? She's a rich girl. Talk to her. Don't talk to me. So the same thing over here. The odd figure, Sava, Kisa Nikita, Iluya. What do you mean? She's got a fat wallet up there in the bank. Taste of a tifrut nafshal. Let her go and take care of her own ransom. What do I got to worry about it for? So what you're doing, it's true, the Tanakh says, look, but I mean, if there's no such takon in the first place, the norm is the father will be married to the daughter, yes. Tanakh is reviewed to review it, but once there is money coming in, so that itself creates a relationship in which you're now saying he shouldn't be married. Therefore, we have to give him rights to that income in order for him to be able to maintain the natural relationship of the parent. Niseit, once she goes ahead and gets married, Yeter la Baal, now the husband gets even more zechuyot, because he is ochel perot and so on. Tan Rabban. Now, the question over here is not Niseit. Niseit is that there's already an nisuin, he went to the chuppah. It's not clear what the interim situation would be. In other words, suppose it's true that the Tanai Beit Din is only mana or matayim. In other words, even according to the Ma'ad Yomar, who says that an arusa has a ketubah, that ketubah is the Tanai Beit Din only for the fundamental value of the ketubah. That fundamental value is the matayim for a betulah and a mana for a be'ulah. Namana, right? Now, there's tons of other stuff that are part of a ketubah, including his need to pay these kinds of costs. Are they included? Money that comes in earlier. Suppose she presents a whole series of gifts at the tnoyim. That's before there's a marriage. So what would be the halacha over there? Tan Rabbanan. Katavla peirot ksut vekelim. She yavod ima mibet avia lebet ba'ala. Suppose her father actually committed himself to all types of things that she's supposed to now be bringing into the marriage. And he writes this out to her from the time of the Eris, before the normal time as of writing the Ketuvah. So if he hadn't written anything yet, there'd be no question. I mean, if there's, at that point, a relationship, it's only vis-a-vis the Iker Ketuvah. But over here, he writes it out. So now what happens in this case? Suppose she dies now, Meita. Before they get a chance to go to the chuppah, lo zacha ha-ba'al b'dvarim halal. The husband, because of the fact that he never got to the chuppah, was never zocha in the full ketubah. Now, of course, this is the other side of the story. This is the question of what the husband gets out of the ketubah. Part of the things that he would have gotten out of the ketubah after the marriage would be that any of the nechasim, any of the property that she had brought into the marriage, he now inherits. However, over here, there never was a marriage. So the question is, if you write out a ketuvah earlier, then it's really chayiv. So now you wrote it out as an arusa. Does the Baal inherit the ketuvah also, or not? So the Tanakhama says no, only if he got to the chuppah.
Or the nedunya.
Well, the nedunya is written now in the ketuvah. It becomes part of the ketuvah. Right? That's what she says. V'dan nedunya, dan alat lemi be'avuan. That's written down in the ketuvah, and hosif lemi dilei, and so on. Right, so that's what we're referring to over here. So now the Rabbi Mishum, Rabbi Natan Amru, however, Rabbi Natan says, no, Zachah Baal B'dvarim Halal. It's not true. The husband is Zocha because it was already written in to the Ketuvah. Lema B'plutik, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, V'Rabbanan Kamiflegeh. Shall we say that the Machlokas of the Tanakhama and Rabbi Natan over here is a mirror image of the Machlokas of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Rabbanan in terms of the rights to the woman's part of the ketubah? In other words, here we're talking about if she dies, whether he inherits that. Now, but the question is, okay, but suppose he dies, or there's a get, would she be zocha? So now that, in fact, is a machlokas. Nit armala o nit garsha. Here, the woman becomes almana or a gerusha, after having received a ketubah that was written out to her as an arusa. So whether the almana or the gerusha was already after the nisuin, or was still before the chuppah, the Tanakhama says, gova takol. She collects the whole thing, everything that was written in this ketuvah, not only the manu matayim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer, no, only mina nisuin gova takol. But mina erisin, she only has the ikar ha-ketuvah. The ikar ha-ketuvah is the betula gova matayim, and the almana is a mana. Why? She's presenting a contract that's got a whole list of other issues and tosefets and so on. Shaloka tavla el almanat v'konsach. The husband only listed those things because of the fact that he had in mind to be machnes or l'chupa. So as part of the marriage, of that chavivus, he would say, tzobis v'isif lo medilei, and he writes this whole, what it is that he had. But obviously he never meant to add anything to a ksuvah for a marriage that would never be consummated. And we take that as an umdana. So if that's the case, According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, there is no ketuvah other than the Tanai Besdin that applies to the Arus, assuming that we hold like that Man D'Omar, which we've been assuming all along, and that's how we pass it. That there is an Ikra Ksuvah given to an Arus or to Mitanai Besdin. So let us say therefore, now this is completing the Gemara's assumption, shall we say therefore, that Leman D'Omar lo zacha, the Man D'Omar who says over here that he was not Zoka in the things that the father had committed himself and that they wrote up in this ksuvah and gave earlier at the time of Erison, he holds basically vis-a-vis the man what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds vis-a-vis the woman. So he's saying just like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah who says that it's true that it was written up in the ksuvah, but we take for granted that the das of writing up the ksuvah was only in order that there be ultimately a chuppah. And that's called the chiba of the nisui. And that by the same token, it's true, just like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said about him, that the Baal didn't give away all of this stuff to her without thinking that they would go to the chuppah. So the father never gave the Baal all of these things without thinking that they'd go to the chuppah also. Therefore, it's overs. There is no chuppah, no ksuvah, other than what the Iker ksuvah is that was mitukan for her. Whereas Man D'Omer Zakha, so if you're going to tell me that the Baal is Zocheh, so then he must hold like a Rabbanon that argue in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he holds that so too would she have been Zocheh if he had written a Hotosefet to her, so therefore if she dies, he's Zocheh. So it makes sense. It's simply the other side of the coin. Says the Gemara, not necessarily are the coins equal, that we could say this is the other side of the coin. Look. Dekuli Amak Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The truth is, we're going to see that we paskin later, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we'd like really to make it work out. I'll leave it. Dekuli Amak like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. You sure you want to interrupt now, right in the middle? Okay. So actually, everybody could hold the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Uman D'Omer Zakha. So the Man D'Omer Lo Zakha. Okay, Lo Zakha. That's exactly what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said she is not Zocha if he dies. So I hold the same thing in the inverse. He is not Zocher if she dies. And the father never meant to give this property over now. But the other Man D'Omer says, Man D'Omer lo Zakha, Man D'Omer Zakha rather, he says, look, it's true that on the surface this appears to argue with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but it doesn't. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah ela midideh lidida, shelo katav la el almanat lekonsa. All that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said is that the chosen has not written out in the Ketuvah that he is wants to be mosif for midilei, except with the understanding that it's going to end up at the chuppah. But the other direction, mididah lididei, when something is being given to the chosen at the time of erusin, afilo Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah modi, over there even Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is moda that a father-in-law to be appreciates and wants to show his relationship with the chosen. So there, even Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would be more than that. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah more than mishum ichtuneu. Va'ichtuneu. It's not because of a marriage. The father doesn't look to this as something that he's giving necessarily only because of the chuppah. He appreciates the current fact that he has a son-in-law to be. The chashivas of that relationship is such that he wants to indicate his appreciation of his new chosen. And therefore, he psychologically is willing at this point to give that indication without necessarily making it so obviously conditional on his performance at a chuppah. So even if the son-in-law would die, and so on, even if she would die, I mean, the son-in-law would still get it because of the chitun. Now, this is not such a difficult idea to accept, because the fact is you ought to look at the other question, which Tosus asks. If we're willing to say that we extend the concept of, we should assume that. I mean, the same thing should be in any case where a guy makes a deal. We find that somebody buys something, right? And something goes wrong. The guy buys a cow, and it dies. So we should say, well, I never meant to buy a cow that would die. That's what you're saying. I'm giving you this gift, but I never meant to give it if my daughter would die. I mean, you could say that about anything. So we should always say that there's an umdana, that a person only meant for something to be purchased if it works out. Or only meant to give something if it works out. I mean, but we don't say that. The only time we say that is if there's something now that's innate in it that created the problem. There's nothing innate that creates the problem. So on the contrary, we should say, based on our experience all over with business transactions throughout Shas, that we don't subscribe to this idea. You went and wrote a contract, but we say, but of course you only meant that. Whoever heard a second, but of course you only meant that. So on the contrary, the way we're coming out of Rebbe Lezer Nazarim should be going to make a heck of a lot of sense. Who's to say otherwise?
He had already
psychologically
married off. It was done for him. He had a benefit.
That's right. So therefore, Tosis explains that the nafkamina is that normally when you're engaged in a business kind of thing, that element of risk taking is part of what you're buying. So in the case where the Abdul Hassan says, Moshe Bar said, okay, there you got something. That is part of the general risk taking. But in the case, the opposite case, where this guy is putting forth something for a marriage over there, it's different. There's no reason to assume that there was any desire to enter into a risk. There's no risk. He's saying what he wants to give in the event that they're married. Okay, the next case that we had in the Mishnah is that a husband is actually chayav de mezonoteha. He has to take care of her needs and pay for, we'll see, mezonot includes a lot of things. Yes.
She gets an adoption, she gets marijuana, she gets
decision. All those things, we have a lot of the Masechta to go. They're all included in the Ksuva, medical care and so on and so forth. We'll see, he provides all types of insurance, and we'll see what he gets in return for it.
He foregoes marrying someone else, marrying this girl.
Doesn't change anything. That's actually the Makor in the Torah, is where he's marrying another girl. And that's the Makor for Sheirat, Sutava Onata Lo Yigraf. You can't in any way cut down what you owe your first wife because you took another wife. Well, that includes all of the things. We got a lot of room left. You're going to learn all kinds of fascinating and amazing, far in the future ideas that are all appeared in the prenuptial agreement that nobody ever heard of until just a few decades ago that has been part of Jewish life for millennia. Yosef Atzadik already had a ksuba, remember, right? Okay, so the next case that we had in the Mishnah is that the husband is chayev in mizonot. Tonarabam, tiknu mizonotea tachat ma'aseyadeha. He is given her ma'aseyadayim, and in return, he has to give her mizonot. And kvurata tachat ktuvata. Because of the nedunya that she brought in the ktuvah, and now he's going to inherit that, he is responsible for her burial. So that's part of husband's responsibility. Now, just to point out that the way that this is phrased becomes rather critical later on. Because what it seems to be saying over here is, the given is ma'aseyadeha, and the takona is mizonoteha. Now that's not so poshut, because actually, we'll see later on, that there's a tzad that a woman can say, look, the chachamim, for my benefit, took my salary and gave it to you so that I can have a reliable income from you that will take care of my needs. The fact is, I'm making a heck of a lot more money than I'm getting from you, and I'm willing to give up on that wonderful takana they made for me. I'm not going to give you my salary. You don't give me any food. But that would mean that the fundamental takana was for her benefit in giving her food, not vice versa. In which case, it should have said, according to that approach, Tiknu ma'aseyadeha tachat mizonoteha. In other words, the mizonot is a given, and then we give her the ma'aseyadayim in exchange for the mizonot, which would leave it up to her. But if the ma'aseyadayim is the given, then it wouldn't leave it up to her. We're going to see that, in fact, this is a question that is raised later on. So the language over here may actually be very misleading. Lefichach continues the brayta with a total non sequitur, which the Gemara is going to be troubled by in a moment. Lefichach, and because this is true, that for the mizonot, he gets ma'aseh adayim, and for the need to bury her, he gets the inheritance of her ketubah, therefore the Baal is ochel perot, therefore he keeps the income of her property. What? Says the Gemara, what are you talking about? Perot? Mandocha shemari, who ever mentioned anything about perot? You never said anything about perot. There's something very strange about this brisa. You're right, says the Gemara, there is indeed. There's something missing in this brisa. Chisuri mechasu. Actually, the brisa is chaser a little piece. What it should have said is like this. Tiknu mizonotea tachat ma'aseh yadeha. Ufir kuna, put it this place. Ufir kuna tachat peirot. And the fact that he needs to go ahead and to ransom her, because of that, he gets to take the peirot. And the kvura, because he is going to inherit her ketuvah when she dies, so he pays for the funeral. Lefichach baal ochel peirot. And that's why the baal eats the peirot, because after all, he's going to be providing ransom. So this is kidnapping insurance, is the peirot. I understand. What's this? My lefichach? Well, you said, you made a list of three things. So what are you saying? Lefichach baal ochel peirot. That's what you just said. You said, we give him the peirot, tachat perkuna. So then when you add the last word, and therefore, the husband eats the peirot. I mean, you might as well say, and therefore, he has to be kaver. Or, and therefore, he gets the right to her income. I mean, that's what we just said. Oh, says the Gemara, no. Over here, you see, we have a whole additional point that we need to address. Because ma'o detema mecha lo nechlinu, anuche nanchinu. What we should do is like this. We shouldn't give him the peirot directly. What we should do is we should invest the peirot. And that way we're going to have a fund, we're going to have a ransom fund. Now, of course, this doesn't make any sense. If we're going to invest the peirot, then we're not eating the peirot. So we say we're giving him the peirot in place of the ransom. So Tosfos says, well, it must mean, let's make a fund which will be available either for ransom or for, in case there's an emergency and he needs money, he'll be able to draw up for this emergency fund, but it shouldn't be part of his day-to-day income. That's a little bit of a kvetch. What is that supposed to mean? What determines the emergency level? What exactly is the ochel perot versus investing the perot? I mean, it's contradictory, no matter how you're going to work it out. So other Rishonim learn that the meaning over here is there should be a dual-tier perot. In other words, she owns a piece of land. He shouldn't take the direct results of the produce of that land. Rather, what should be done is there should be an investment that is made yearly based on what's coming in from her initial investment. Then the peirot of that additional investment, that he should eat. And that way we're going to be building up a fund which will be usable for ransom if necessary. Maybe that's what you should do. Therefore, I need to tell you that no, kamash balan. And what's the reason why we would do this? Because in came mim nevelo part. I might think, if I haven't built up a ransom fund, when it comes time to actually pay up, he won't, because he's not going to have any money to fall back on. He's going to say, who knows, maybe there was very little that I ate. So kabash landa adifas, therefore teaches us that we're going to have better results of having him pay up if we let him eat. Because zim nidalo malo, uparak lo mididei, what we really want is an insurance policy. We don't want a fund that's going to be defined by the amount of money in the fund. Because if we do that, the person becomes now psychologically involved in, so how much cash value is there in this insurance policy? So he's going to start focusing on the cash value rather than on the term, right? He's going to say, well, look, we only built up $10,000 of cash value. They want $20,000 for a ransom. I only got $10,000. Masha Enkin, if he doesn't focus on the cash value, and instead he recognizes that he's been eating maybe for the past 20 years, maybe he's got another 20 years of eating to go. So then he's not thinking in terms of a particular amount of money. He doesn't really realize how much it is that he's taken up until now. So if he gets a $20,000 bill for a ransom, he's more likely to pay it with an ongoing relationship to a term value than he would to a cash value. And that's the chiddush of the braisa. Lefichach, therefore, since we want to ensure a response to a ransom that's not linked to a particular amount of a fund, it works out better if he's ochel peros. And therefore, it'll be parek leimididei. Amazing. It's amazing the issues they're taking into consideration of me. Says the Gemara, now, why don't we do it the other way around? You're saying we've got two things over here that we're going to be giving you. I mean, I understand that obviously the part about inheritance, that he's inheriting the ketuvah, therefore he has to bury her. I mean, burial and inheritance are related. That's obvious that's a trade-off. But, I mean, why is it a more reasonable trade-off to say that her income is his because he provides for her, and that the need to ransom her is from the income of her property or the income of her investments. I mean, couldn't we do it the other way around? We could say her ongoing income would be connected to her ransom, and we could say that the other way around, the income from any property that she owns or any bank accounts, is connected to the money that he needs to provide for her. And there's a big nafkamina, you see, because if you hold that the woman has a right to say, I'm very grateful to you gentlemen rabbis for caring so much about women. You think they remembered that, huh? I'm very grateful to you rabbis for caring so much about women and giving me all of this guarantee for my husband. But frankly, I married a wimp and I'd rather take care of myself. So that she can only do when it comes to mizonot. She can't do that when it comes to ransom. In other words, she does not have, why that's true is a fascinating further excursion. But it's clear, Tosis points out here, it's clear from the sugya later, that even if you hold that a woman has a right to say, forget about giving you my salary and you can forget about taking care of my bills. I have my own bank account, I have my own credit cards, I have my own income, I'll take care of my own needs, thank you. That she can do. If we would have reversed it so that she would have been able to say, look, I understand that I got no options when it comes to my salary because that's for my ransom. But you could stop taking my benefits from my field or from my income, from my bank account, that you can take. So there's a big nafka mina. Which one can she say? Why can't she cancel the rights to her insurance policy for ransom? That's not so pashut. Tosfos says, look, it's clear from the sugya of the Gemara holds that. That's not really up to her. Why it's really not up to her? There's a number of issues that we have. First of all, it could be that statistical thinking is not within the realm of normal people's thought. In other words, what we need to do is to provide for statistical possibilities. People don't think reasonably in that sense. So she figures, so what are the chances that I'm going to get... No, it doesn't work like that because it's a social tikkun of ketuva. We can't think in those terms. We have to think about the fact that we need to make sure that people are going to be ransomed. Therefore, we can't put that in her hands. Or maybe there's another element. Maybe there's an element of, look, we know perfectly well that in the event that she is captured, she's not going to be allowed to just be carried off and become now a shivcha in the church. Obviously, we need to ransom her. So therefore, she has no right to say, well, don't ransom me, because we're going to end up ransoming her. So the bottom line is, whatever takana we create for that, it's not up to her. And this is also a profound insight. Insurance policies are basically balanced across the entire actuarial table. It's not one person that's really providing insurance. So since the whole issue over here is insurance, it's mandatory. We don't give it to her now to make that determination. We'll see later on the Gabi medical insurance what the situation would be, which is also part of the Ksuva. But right now we're just looking at this. So therefore the Gemara wants to know, why are you so sure that the takona is this, that? Why didn't we make the takona the other direction? Let him keep not the income, but rather let him keep, not her working income, but let him keep her investment income in return for taking care of her, and let him keep whatever she manages to bring in to the household in return for her pirkuna. Answers the Gemara. The reason for that is, Omer Abaye, tiknu matsui le matsui, v'she'eno matsui le she'eno matsui. We try to match up the type of issues. In the same way that you understand that there's a perfect match of his need to bury her for in exchange for the right to inherit her, right? We also want to talk about norms. What's a norm? The norm is a woman needs to eat. And a norm is that a woman does bring in money on some level or another, either by working or by working in the home and doing things, manufacturing things, knitting or whatever types of things she's doing that is valuable and that he's going to be getting. Now, those are two norms, and therefore let's take the norms and cancel them. How about ransom, kidnapping? Well, you can't say that happens every Monday and Thursday. That's something that is not a norm. It's also not a norm for a woman to have investments that she did not bring into the marriage and that she keeps for herself. So usually a person that goes into a marriage, basically this becomes whatever the chassid she has, she invests them in the marriage directly. It doesn't keep them for herself. So therefore, where you have a case that she has, let's say a field that she owns, or maybe she inherited a rich uncle later, whatever the case is, she, therefore, we offset that income with the unusual ransom price. And that way, it's just a better match. Well, there, yes, in a sense. That means that we're going to go... You know, there's a big movement right now by a number of intelligent people, although they do live in Lakewood, and the movement is to see to it that every single Ben Taira has life insurance.
I noticed that.
And the reason is because what these guys figure is if they go and die, the Tzibor is going to go and collect, and you have to collect like $500,000 minimum to have any type of income. So why should I bother paying for insurance? It's become a horrific situation because the Tzibor is large enough that quite a few people die or are killed every year, and you have these emergency magbiot, which are outrageous. It makes much more sense to simply create the mechanism. So they've created spending because there's obviously specific actuarial tables that would apply to yeshiva bokrim, who are, you know, different set of activities, travel, and so on and so forth.
Non-smoking.
And that are, you know, right, non-smoking, and of course, risk-free driving, and, you know, relaxed, yeah, all types of things. So, yeah. So, okay. I mean, it's exactly this idea. It's all very nice to say you've got a backup, but what Chazal tried to do is to create a situation where you don't need a backup. The husband, she's paying for it.
The
kailalim.
Part of their bet. An automatic guarantee.
Right?
Is that good or bad?
It's wonderful. You understand that it was only a few decades ago that it became mutter to have life insurance for most of these people. But it's not. I mean, where's your bitachon?
Will live forever. What is it?
Why can't you assume that you'll have a normal lifetime in Shem, and why are you allowed to buy insurance? Adarav, if you buy insurance, then you're encouraging, the Midas Adin. No, really, this was because maybe part of the cheshbon to allow you to live was that you should be able to bring money in for your family, but if you're already going to, they're going to make more money by your dying, so it's better than you should die. Makes a lot of sense. The fact that nobody, as I've pointed out many times, that nobody has yet realized that the actuarial tables work beautifully well, whether you're a tzaddik or a rush or a whatever it is, it's exactly the same actuarial tables. But that's the real threat of insurance that they haven't worked out yet. I understand, obviously the insurance companies have to take into consideration if the guy's a tzaddik, he's not going to die. If the guy's a rush, he is going to die. And nonetheless, they end up making money despite the fact that they don't take that into consideration. In the early days, you should know, in the first attempts at creating insurance policies, this was the universal reaction. The church was outraged.
Okay.
Of course, how can you mean? It's random. How can you create an actuarial table when everything is hashgacha pratis and the guy is only going to die if he did enough
here?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you can't create an actual, you have to know whether he's a tzaddik or a rasha. Lemaisa, of course, the Rambam has said, in the Hilchos Tshuva, that if somebody, if Moshe Rabbeinu says, Yadati Acharei Motzi Kashkes Tashkisun, that's also an actuarial table. There's always people who will be Ashkes Tashkisun. Yeah? About whether it's Mutter. Yeah, but not about this. Okay, in any event, it's a fascinating. It's called the Challenge to the Gods.
Insurance.
It's sure it's going to
Why should that be massaging?
I don't know. Last I heard, they're having a hard time putting it together.
Why can't that be massaging with Julio, the insurance people?
It's not us. Okay.
It is, isn't it?
Not if you're the house.
Right.
No, if you're the house, you're making good money. Omar Rava. So Rava says, okay, obviously the Tana that we've just discussed is saying that the mizonot is offset with Maisei Yadayim. It's not really a chi of the Araisa. But the following Tana says, mizonot is given, not tiknu mizonot because of Maisei Yadayim, but rather the Torah is mechayev mizonot, the Tana. The following Tana says like this. When the Torah says, she'irach suta va'onata lo yigra, that if a person takes another wife, this is referring to the case, again, it's beautiful. We started off with the relationship of Bitola Amma. But all of the dinim of the Chiyudim of Aksuva are connected to that case. Because the only place where the Torah tells us how you have to treat a wife is when it refers to the Adon who took the Batla Amma. And now he goes ahead and he uses the money that he bought La Amma as her marriage money, which of course shows the most profound interrelationship of those two sugyas. Because Yehud is Kiddushin and it's the money that was given for the Amma. But okay. So there the Torah says, and ima cheret yikachla, if he ends up buying, getting another wife, he cannot reduce his chiyuvim to this girl that he bought and then married. Right? From there we learn that obviously he can't do that to any woman. In other words, this is the fundamental thing you owe your wife. But the problem is that the Torah uses a very strange word. And sheira is not clear. What is that? Ksuta, that seems clear. Ksut means clothing, I guess. Onata also is not clear. What exactly is onata? So here the Braita says like this. Sheira refers to mizonot. V'chein hu omer, v'asher achlu she'er ami. They ate up all the things that my nation had. This is what the goyim did. Oram me'aleim ifshito. They stripped their very skins from off their backs. That was, they basically abused Klal Yisrael. So, okay, if that's the case, we see that she'er is food. It's the way that it's used. Ksuta, okay, ksuta means covering. It's kemashmo'o. Onata refers to zo ona ha'amura b'torah. This refers to intimate relations. We see that ona is a lashon of sexual relations, because it says imta'ane et binotai. So we have in the discussion of Lavan and Yaakov Avinu, Lavan makes Yaakov promise that he will not be torturing his daughters. Tosafot, on the contrary. So I mean, if anything, it's mash from the opposite. It's mash from over here that ona, I mean, it can't mean don't sleep with my daughters because you're torturing them. Or we're going to use ona, meaning that it is something positive. Right? So Tosafot says what it means over here is onata lo yigra, meaning something which is an inui if she doesn't get it, lo yigra. That's the meaning of taking love on. So in other words, since we see that deprivation of sexual relations is a torture, so what he's saying is, don't be ma'anet benotai, therefore this is one thing you have to supply this woman. Rabbi Elazar Omer, no. She'era actually refers to intimate relations. V'cheinu Omer, ish al ko she'er b'saro lo tikrivu l'galot ervah. So she'er is a lashon not of meat that you eat, but of flesh that you sleep with. And therefore, it's the meaning of what we use for sexual relations, ona. That's ksuta. I agree with you. Ksuta is kamashma. Onata, actually, in the pasuk is a reference to food. Elu bizonot. V'cheinu omer, vayaancha, vayariveka. We see that hunger is called ona. So vayaancha, vayariveka. So that means that it's a reference to, you have to have enough food or you'll be hungry. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, No, the whole, it's all one thing. She'era kesuta means, lefum she'era, tein kesuta. It's all a reference to, now, this is an old lady, then that's the kind of clothing that she needs. This is a young girl, that's the type of clothing that she needs. Clothing does not mean something to cover your body. It means something suitable for her. So it needs to be appropriate. That's the meaning of she'era kesuta. It's not two separate things. She'lo yitein la lo shel yalda lezekena, ve lo shel zekena liyalda. You cannot dress her inappropriately. She needs to be dressed according to her needs.
That's why it's called
suitable. And ksuta ba'onata. Huh?
That's why it's called suitable.
Ah, it is.
It is.
That's right. That's right. Beautiful.
There's more
about
it.
It's suto.
It also means his
body.
Suto.
In the brachas.
Right. Yes.
The onata, when it says ksuta onata, it's also a definition of ksuta. Lefum onata, ten ksuta. According to the season of the year, is what you're supposed to be giving her to wear. Shelo yiten chadashim b'yamot hachama. Don't buy new, and when the clothing is new, it's very hot, very warm. It hasn't had a chance to wear down yet and be washed and get thin, so it's too thick. It's not suitable for summertime. So don't buy new clothing in Yomot HaChama. V'lo shechakim b'yomot HaGeshamim. Don't give her worn out clothing during the cold season. So it's all basically one pirish on the tzorech of the begadim, according to Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov. Okay, so we see over here, a machlokes, in our Tana, it said, the mezonot are tachat ma'aseh yadeh. Over here it says the mezonot, at least according to the first two mandionim, actually part of the fee of the Raisa.
Tosis points out that at the end of the day, this Raisa continues to show that even according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, really, all of them are the Raisa, including Mizonos, and therefore he wonders who exactly is the Tana of the previous Raisa with the Mashmot, is that Mizonos is the Rabbon.